baton. Before he or Dean could do anything, almost point blank, the Remington 44 discharged. The Kenny jumped over Christy's slumping form, fell upon Uta's back, and tried to wrench the baby from her grasp. Failing to instantly do that, he jerked the woman to her feet, snatched her by the hair, and craned back her neck. He held the muzzle of the cocked 44 tight to her throat. The SIG's slide snapped closed, and a fraction of a second later, the pistol barked once. Shot in the temple, the Kenny toppled backward, and as he fell, the Remington discharged skyward. Ryan quickly turned Christy onto her back, and was relieved to see her green eyes blinking up at him. Black powder soot dusted one side of her face. Her red hair clung tightly to her head. Christy clutched at the juncture of her neck and shoulder.
I'm okay. Bastard just skinned me.
More shotgun blasts boomed. By the time Ryan looked up, he had no shot. The surviving Kennys were already in full retreat. He leaped to his feet and sprinted after them. As he burst through the edge of the trees, he saw four of them darting into the willows on the other side of the channel. The last Kenny in the line, a big guy with stubbly iron-gray hair and beard, was wearing a long khaki duster and carrying a scoped long blaster by its sling.
Fire blast!
Ryan raised the P226 and snap-fired twice as the man disappeared into the bush. The slugs thwacked futilely into the thicket.
The bastard had his stire!
It had to have gotten uncovered during the canny advance or retreat. Ryan lowered his hand blaster, a bitter taste in his mouth. He couldn't go after the treasured rifle, and he couldn't chase down and chill all of their attackers. Uta and her children still needed protection. Jack stepped up beside him.
Track?
Just far enough to see where they're headed.
When he returned to the others, Mildred was treating Christie's wound, a shallow pistol ball crease where her neck met her shoulder. Though it bled a little, it was barely a nick. Christy gave him a warm and confident smile, but her mane of red hair, which was still in a state of shock, coiled defensively close to the sides of her head.
Hey, this hurts bad!
JB held up his arm for Ryan to see. The wooden crossbow bolt was no more than 6 inches long. The single-bladed steel broadhead point poked out the underside of his forearm. The fletched tail stuck out the top. Lucky for J.B., the broadhead had slipped between the major blood vessels, bones, and tendons.
Lend me a hand, Ryan.
Ryan decided that snapping off the short bolt would cause J.B. unnecessary pain. He unsheathed his 18-inch panga, and with a couple of strokes from the heavy blade, sawed through the shaft behind the broadhead. J.B. then jerked out the shaft himself. Bright blood seeped down his forearm and dripped off the tip of his elbow. While Mildred cleaned and dressed the armorer's flesh wound, Ryan did a quick survey of the battlefield. 17 Kennys were sprawled in and among the trees. Overhead, wisps of gun smoke trapped in the foliage drifted slowly through skinny shafts of sunlight, shimmering like spirits of the newly departed.
Will they come again?
Ryan turned and shook his head.
We hurt 'em plenty bad.
When her medic duties were completed, Mildred knelt over the nearest canny corpses, careful not to touch them with her bare hands. Picking up a twig, she took a sample of the thick, sticky gray matter leaking from the ears of one of the dead. Mildred held up the twig for Ryan to see.
Did you notice this nasty discharge coming from their ears and noses? Some of these sons of bitches have got the oozies, and it looks like third stage to me.
Yeah, I saw. The whole pack is probably infected.
That would explain the suicidal frenzy of their attack.
Uzis?
Uta put a protective arm around the shoulders of her older children and drew them close.
Is that some kind of disease? I've never heard of it before.
It's a disease of the brain that's transmitted through the eating of raw human flesh, and in particular, the uncooked tissues of the brain. If I had time to do autopsies on these bodies, I'm sure I'd find holes threading all through the cerebral tissue.
And this disease, that's what makes them go canny?
Actually, we don't know what the cause of the cannibalism is. It could be unrelated to the Uzis. It could be genetic. A failure of hemoglobin metabolism.
Realizing she was talking over the woman's head, Mildred translated the pre-dark medical terminology.
A rad mutation of the blood passed on from parents to child. There's a similar illness called porphyria, which produces an obsessive compulsion to feed on fresh blood and raw meat.
Is that your diagnosis, madam?
No, not a diagnosis. It was a hypothesis about the origin of their murderous behavior being secondary to infection. I didn't say the Uzis and porphyria are one and the same. If anything, the symptomology here is closer to transmittable spongiform encephalopathy, a disease that incubates silently over dozens of years. When the Uzis finally start to kick in, its victims first lose control of their emotions, and then more gradually of all of their bodily functions. Cannibalistic behavior predates by decades the appearance of all disease symptoms, and by inference, the appearance of amyloid plaque lesions in the brain tissue. As we all know, cannies have the habit, during lean times, of eating their weaker fellows. Because of this, the Uzis will eventually be passed on to every member of a band. So the behavior causes the transmission of the infection, not vice versa.
My apologies, my dear Dr. Wyeth. I should have let you complete your remarks. The power of your physician's logic is, as ever, irrefutable.
Bunch of crazy, sick cannies.
We should really burn the bodies, Ryan.
Yeah, but how can we do it without some kind of fuel?
Jack reappeared in the clearing, stepping nimbly over the string of corpses.
Cannies make run for perdition.
Christy rose to her feet.
Then they're hightailing it.
Question is, are we going to let them get away?
JB flexed the fingers of his wounded left arm and grimaced.
We still owe them something.
With a 20-minute head start and the companions hobbled by non-combatants, Ryan knew the prospects of catching up with the cannies before they reached the Ville were slim or none.
First thing we've got to do is get Uta and the girls safely to perdition.
Ryan nodded.
And after?
Cannies got long blaster like yours.
Yeah, I know.
Then the oldest girl struggled free of her mother's sheltering arm and jumped to her feet. Her angelic face twisted by grief, her lower lip and chin quivering, she advanced on Ryan.
Hunt them, mister! Chill them all! The ones what ate our paw!
But Ryan had already made up his mind to do just that. A tin cup thunked on the long bar top, which was made from 5 hollow-core doors lined end to end.
Just a minute.
The bartender continued to sweep around the sawhorses that supported the doors. The cup thunked again, louder. Somewhat irritated, the bartender of Perdition's finest gaudy house looked up from his broom. The impatient customer was tall, lean, and lantern-jawed. The hair on his head was shaved to a gray stubble, which matched the salt-and-pepper scruff that carpeted his cheeks and the front of his neck. His ears were rimmed with what looked like layers of light brown river dirt. The barman took in the long blaster slung over the guy's right shoulder, a sniper job with telescopic sights, worth plenty of jack. It was the kind of blaster a fellow could get himself killed dead over if he wasn't careful.
Who's the sawed-off little shit running off at the mouth?
The tall man hooked a thumb in the direction of the gaudy's only crowded table, where a dude in tattered BDUs was holding court before a spellbound audience of sluts and hangers-on. The bartender took an involuntary half-step backward. This customer had some of the foulest breath he had ever suffered through, and given the gaudy's regular clientele, that was saying something.
Who's asking?
He rested his elbows on his broom handle. The skinhead female who stood beside the tall guy leaned over the bar. The barman's gaze dropped at once to the low-cut top of her dress and the high, tight cleavage she was showing off. Then to the muzzle of the cocked blue steel 36 caliber Colt Army blaster, half concealed behind her slender, dusty arm. She was pointing the black powder revolver's muzzle straight at his heart with a feverish smile.
The Right Reverend Gore's asking, and you'd best be answering right quick.
It's no big secret.
The bartender mentally measured the distance between himself and the sawed-off double-barreled 12-gauge he kept hidden under the bar top. Given that the grinning skinhead bitch had caught him flat-footed, and that counting the tall guy, she was backed by 3 evil-smelling road scum compadres who were lined up on the other side of the bar, he figured the wisest course was to leave the scattergun alone.
The guy's name is Grubb. He's a scrounger from down Slate City way. Came in here last night telling stories about some strange happenings over to Moonboyville. Crazy stories. Muties in black armor. Blasters that cut through solid walls like they were made of paper. Lots of other stuff, too, but I can't tell you about it because I wasn't listening real hard. I hear a lot of rad pure crap around here, usually when somebody's fallen off a jolt high. Anyway, some of the customers have been finding what Grubb's got to say altogether fascinating. He even got a couple of the dumb sluts to give him freebies, and the local high roller has been buying